listening to National Rock Review.
Okay, so thanks for taking the time to speak to us in National Rock Review, Alan. You've recently been out on the road with John Mayall. Can you tell us what was that like?
It was fantastic. First and foremost, just like to say another huge thank you to everyone involved for giving us the opportunity. It was a great honour to do this, such a support, to be asked to come on the road with someone who I've been listening to since I was as a kid, and learned a whole lot of guitar playing from people with his records. That was just a fantastic thing to do, and to get to be able to do, and the whole experience was literally, there's a whole lot of work and effort goes into putting these two together, but the whole experience for us was just so cool and relaxing. It was amazing, and everyone was super friendly and looked after us very well, and including John Mayall and everyone in the band, everyone around his team.
Great.
We all got on really great, and we just had a great time. You know, it was magic.
Yeah, the shows that I saw were awesome. The couple of shows I came to see with you guys with John Mayall was superb. So you're just about to release your third album, Reaching for the Light.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. We've been a little bit against the clock with this one. Although we've been talking about recording this album, and we've been recording this album for a bit of a while now, but in terms of actually physical time in the studio, we've not had a massive amount because of our ridiculous touring schedule. We've been on the road so much that any tiny little gap we've had, we've been back in the studio and getting on with that and trying to get it finished. So we've kind of been against the wire a little bit to meet all the deadlines for the press.
Yeah.
So we managed it, and I think in terms of what kind of record it is, I would say that it's a natural progression from Standing in the Shadows, but I think we've really wanted to, and I had a chat with all the guys before we embarked on this project, and I said, look, and the reality of success that Standing in the Shadows had was fantastic, and everyone's proud of it. We're all proud of how we did. I said, but I really need everyone, including myself. We need to up the game now and make the next record so much better that we couldn't possibly be, because if we just had a record that was just the same or just as good as Standing in the Shadows,
yeah,
I think, to be honest, it would have been a little bit of trouble for us. I think we need something that really stands out and says, right, okay, they mean business now.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think we've achieved that, and I'm very proud of what we've got. And hopefully, fingers crossed that everyone will see it that way too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, actually. You answered my second question I was going to say about, has there been more pressure and expectation to follow up with this, with the new album, and obviously there has.
It's only pressure. It's only pressure from ourselves. I tend not to worry too much about getting that kind of pressure from elsewhere in my life. I'm in charge of my destiny, and if... As long as I'm happy with what I do, then if I believe in it, then people around me will hopefully believe in it too. And if there's any pointers need made, or anyone that's got any advice over it, then I'm absolutely open and willing to listen to anything. No one knows everything, so I want everyone. It's always, every day is a learning curve, But essentially, we're making music, and if you make music that lifts you and makes you feel good and you enjoy, as far as I'm concerned, you're doing okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the title of the album is Reaching for the Light. Where did the album title come from?
I wrote a song called on the album that's called Rush Hour.
Right.
And this particular, lyrically, this particular song, this was a bit of a, it was a bit of a song, really, when I was young, when I was in my teens, really. I started sort of messing around with this little idea, and I had these chords, and I used to sing this sort of opening couple of lines, And then I kind of left it at that for a long, long time until now, and I thought, well, I feel now is the time. I don't know why, don't ask me why, I don't know, but I felt now was the time to relook at that for some reason. Because the idea that I started having about where I musically, where I could take this song was fitting with the shape of the album and the theme of the album.
Right.
So I thought, right, okay, well, we're gonna have a look at this again, and funnily enough, and I wrote the rest of the lyrics, but funnily enough, the lyrics that I had for this when I was young, when I was in the teens, I didn't change one word, and I thought, well, I'm gonna have to change all that, because you know when you write stuff when you're 16, you look at it when you're this age and you think, what I'm thinking, but actually, it stayed, man. You know, so I was quite happy with that, but the theme for that song lyrically was a lot to do with like feeling the pressure of life really, and for whatever reason for anyone at any age, you know, and feeling like you're kind of suffocating a little bit, and it's hard to break out of what is your life and things like that. So I mean, and it always felt to me something like you know a feeling like you were kicking your feet hard and trying to swim to the top to try and get a breath of air.
Yeah.
So, and I just had a vision in mind of looking up and swimming to the top and seeing the light coming in and finally seeing a bit of hope at the end, you know. Yeah. So, it was kind of something like that, you know, and that's probably as best I can explain it at this juncture.
Yeah, that's cool. So I hear that, like, I haven't really heard anything of the new album yet, obviously, but I hear it's a lot faster. What made you change the direction and, you know, to go for that sort of faster sound?
Well, I mean, there's a few songs on there that are a bit faster paced, I think.
Yeah.
I'd never deliberately write a certain style of song just to put on an album. I mean, I only ever write what comes out, what makes me feel right. And there's I think, you know, the kind of songs we had on Standing in the Shadows, you know, you get that, we've had that kind of, you know, the kind of smouldering effect and the mid-pace kind of stuff that was, you know, that became the kind of king sound. Yeah. And that's still there. I mean, that's all added in that, all that's there. But, you know, and there's just another couple of things that just, they're lyric driven, and you feel a certain way about what you're singing, what you're writing about, and if it takes that kind of direction in terms of the speed of the beat or whatever, you know, then you know that's just how it goes. I mean, like I say, nothing was deliberate. I mean, I just write songs, but on listening back to the tracks, I think, all right, okay, yeah, we've got stuff that's a bit, you know, a bit sort of a little bit faster paced here and there, and it all seems to blend really nicely with the other things that we've got in there. I mean, there's an amazing mixture of songs in here, and you know, I look forward to hearing it, actually, to hear it for yourself, but I mean, I'm very, very pleased with how it's going.
Great. But as a songwriter, where do you find your inspiration?
Just from everything in life, really. My own life's exciting enough to be writing about. There's always something going on. There's always something going on in public. There's always something going on in the background. You know, there's many, many things that I can, as I say, I can write about things from childhood right up to present day.
Yeah.
You know, it's been an experience. You know, I've never went to sort of sit and look for sympathy for anything that I write about. But, luckily enough, you know, everyone's got problems in life, and everyone's been through things and been through good and bad and everything else, just like me.
Yeah.
And luckily enough, I get to write about it. You know, it's great therapy.
Yeah, that's cool. So next month you're about to hit the road again with King, and I was wondering, so far, have you actually had the chance to test out any of the new material live yet?
Not live, just because we were still sort of trying to get all of it recorded in time, and by the time we did the last run of gigs last December and then we were back in the studio over the sort of Christmas and New Year period, sort of trying to get it finished.
Yeah.
So, and then after that, I've been out on the road with my brother for a few weeks. So we've not had a chance, only in rehearsal, so uh, So hopefully it's all going to come together. But actually, I'm really excited though to get to play the new stuff in front of our crowd to see what the reaction is. I like to see the crowd reacting to a brand new song to see how they take to it.
Yeah.
We may be setting ourselves up for a fall, but you never know.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy to take the risk.
Yeah. So in the March shows, we'll get to hear a little bit of the new stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to put some new stuff in the set. I mean, I don't think it would be right to just blast everyone with the whole album. I'm not believing that. I think you have to honour the songs that people come and watch you for because they've never heard the new ones. So I think it's nice to lace in a few of the new ones there in amongst the set just to sort of ease people in a little bit, because I think if you blast people with a whole set of brand new songs, it's too much to take in at one time. So the attention span and the concentration from people watching the band would get worn. So it's nice just to put a new one in here and there and lace them through the set and ease them in that way. So that they're getting the familiarity of what they know, and then I hear a new song and that was nice.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So on your first two albums you had a cover on each album, you had Old Love.
Yeah.
On the last album you had on the first album, and you had Jealousy by Frankie Miller. What made you choose those tracks in particular to cover?
Well, I mean, they're songs I love. That's the plain and simple, that they're the songs I really like, and I felt that the type of songs they were, it wasn't self indulgence, and I said. It was just, I think they fitted with the themes of both albums.
Yeah.
I think they were there. I mean, in particular, the Frankie Miller songs.
Yeah.
I'm a big Frankie Miller fan, always was, and I just wanted to show a little bit of tribute to him and for the fact that I really loved his work, and I was such a fan of his singing and his playing and writing. I thought, well, okay, and again, I'm a sucker for setting myself a challenge, and I thought, well, let's do it. And it's music that appeals to me because it's music that comes from the heart and it's real and it's meant. And I think I can relate to that, and that's why I felt that I was able to perform these songs.
Yeah.
Without it sounding like just reading the dots and playing the dots. That's not what I'm all about at all. So I was happy to do them and thankfully, people seem to see it the same way as I did, so they were fairly successful songs, of course.
Yeah.
Love and Jealousy being two of the most sort of well-known songs that King are known for now, actually.
Actually, I was just going to mention that because I think the very first time I ever saw you play, I remember, I think it was The Sage, and you were opening for Joanne Shaw Taylor, and you played Old Love, and you dropped into the solo, and, you bring the volume down to the point where it's just basically... Yeah. You see you playing, it's more or less unplugged, and you could pretty much hear a pin drop in the room. So you more or less made that song your own, you took it to that point. Where did your inspiration come from to do that? Was that something you just tried out one night, or,
Well, it's something that, I think from an early stage, from playing in bands when I was young, and playing blues songs, which basically, there's a very sort of, format for playing that style of standard blues. So you've got three chords here and there, and I think one thing that I learned growing up listening to guys like Peter Green and Buddy Guy in particular for the whole dynamic thing, and I would say that Buddy was one of the guys that sort of mastered that really well. I mean, and everyone did, Stevie Ray, Peter Green, Clapton, everyone sort of, and it made sense to me that songs with this kind of format musically, there's not a lot of places you can go with it, so you have to create a song through the dynamic of it. So I think to try and sort of, we started experimenting with things like this when I was, 15, 16 and stuff, but as I say, I would never take claim for inventing that kind of thing, I watched Buddy Guy doing it, and everyone else.
Yeah.
And I think, because I think to get the feeling across, and if you especially if you're playing that kind of blues and you're trying to lose yourself in a moment,
yeah,
in a solo or a piece of lyric, and you just happen to make you work the band so that we all feel the same, and if everyone's pulling in that kind of direction the same way and everyone's feeling it at the same time, then that dynamic will come up and down, and you'll have that quiet part, and then you build it and you build it. And you try and get the goosebumps on everyone's arms, you know what I mean? When you make it right. And I think that's where that kind of comes from, and I think it's so relevant to so much music, you know, especially music that's got a lot of, you know, feeling involved in it, a lot of, you know, passion.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to have that dynamic, or you just sort of monotone your way through a set, yeah, and it can be pretty boring, you know.
Yeah. Whenever you get to that point, I always just like to look around the room to see the jaws dropped. It's like,
well, my plan is working. Then that's the idea, I suppose. Yeah,
it's pretty special. So, you know, out of all the places you've ever played, is there anywhere, you know, do you have like a dream gig, a dream venue, somewhere that you've always wanted to play?
Yeah, you know, well, funny enough, I mean, you know, as a Glasgow lad. And growing up, I always used to go and watch bands. I think, you know, one of the first bands I went to see was like The Cult or Big Country or something like that back when I was like too young to be there. And,
yeah.
And I always wanted to play the Barrowlands,
yeah,
in Glasgow. I just always wanted to do that. It was just a fantastic, and even the Apollo in Glasgow, but it was sadly gone by the time I was sort of old enough to be involved in music. But
yeah,
but the Barrowlands especially, and then. I remember years ago we had a great opportunity. Actually, we got invited to play at the Barrowlands, and we recorded. My brother and I recorded a song, a Frankie Miller song,
yeah,
another Frankie Miller song. We were asked to record a Frankie song for a three disc album that was going to be a tribute to Frankie Miller, and there was all sorts of bands. I mean, there was people like Billy Connolly and Robert Carlyle and, yeah, real actors and comedians, as well as massive bands. I mean, I think at some point U2 were involved and things like that, right, and a few other bands, you know. They were all recording songs. So we got permission to record one of the songs that was my favourite songs at the time, which was a song called I Know Why the Sun Don't Shine.
Yeah.
And the reason I loved this song was because Paul Kossoff and Andy Fraser and Simon Cutt from Free had recorded this with Frankie Miller,
yeah,
in the 70s, and I just always liked it. I loved that song. It was on a Blues Roll album from Paul Kossoff, and I thought, well, what a great opportunity. And they were having the launch night at the Barrowlands, so I was thinking, oh, amazing, we're going to get to play the Barrowlands at last. And we looked at our tour schedule, and we were headlining a festival somewhere in Europe, and we could not get out of it.
No.
I was raging. So at that point, I missed my chance to play the Barrowlands, but I'm sure I'll get another chance at some point.
Yeah, that'll be a good gig. So I keep on getting asked. I've got a lot of music friends in the US, and I've told them about you guys a lot, and they always say, you know, do you guys have any plans to go out to the US at any point?
Well, I mean, there's always plans. You know, there's always plans to get to the States. You know, obviously it's, you know, home of the blues and all that kind of stuff, and it would be nice to get out there, and I'm sure we will at some point. You know, I mean, it's an expensive trip to take.
Yeah.
And as soon as all the logistics are right for it, I'm sure we'll get out there, you know. And I've been over in the States before touring with my brother over the years, and it was great fun, you know. And obviously, we've spent some time in Canada and stuff like that, so that was amazing. But yeah, as soon as it's all sort of put together and all the boxes are picked, then I'm sure we'll get out there.
Great. The last time I spoke to your brother Stevie, he told me that this year was like the 20th anniversary of you guys playing together. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We I had a band, and Stevie and I were both playing in two different bands at the time, in the early 90s, and he wanted to leave his band, and I was looking for a guitar player / singer for my band.
Yeah.
So the timing was right. And just before that, actually, what actually tipped him over the edge to come in and play in my band was when I was 18, I got my tonsils out.
Right.
And I couldn't sing for about 6 weeks. So I had a run of gigs then, and I said, "Yeah, can you come in?" And we were looking for a guitar player at the time as well to add with another guitarist. So I said, "Look, can you come in and sing for me for a while?" And he did, and he absolutely loved the band and he loved what we were doing. And on the 1st of January 1995, he joined my band, and we played together in the Blackwater Blues Band for a couple of years, and then changed the name to the Mimmo Brothers.
Yeah. That's amazing.
And so 20 years this year. So we're looking for, we just done a European tour, and we've got our UK tour coming up in September, October. So hopefully that's going to be a great one. We'll get all the crowd involved, and we'll be asking people to select from all of our back catalogue right back to 1995 to tell us what songs they want to hear, and we'll just play them.
That's cool. So, from the Nimmo Brothers, how did you come to meet the rest of the guys in King King, you know, Lindsay and Bob and Wayne? How did that all come together?
Lindsay was a regular bass player in the Nimmo Brothers for about 4 or 5 years, about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And so obviously I met Lindsay then, and him and I just sort of really struck a good friendship, and we had a very good rapport together, and we basically became drinking buddies for a decade and a half. And we always played around with it as well, and we put little sort of little projects together musically, and then we decided to pull our finger out and do it properly. So because we both always had pretty much the same vision of what we wanted to achieve and how we wanted to run our business and what we wanted to do with it and how we would, ideas on how we would progress it forward. And we were always in sync with one another in that kind of sense. And so it really seemed to work. And I think I met Wayne probably in 1999 or something. I met Wayne, he was playing the Ainsley at the time, and we were over in Holland, a thing called Bothbop.
Yeah.
And we were both on, you know, we were both on the same bill, and we sort of got to chat, and we kind of stayed sort of loosely in touch over the years, and then everyone, when you're playing in different bands, and then, of course when you're playing with Ian Parker and everybody else, and we always bumped into one another. We always had this chat about always, you know, eventually doing something together, and you know, we'll one day we'll get to play, you know, we'll get to play together, and it eventually it happened, and then I think Wayne's been with us probably about four or five years now.
Yeah.
And then we met Europe, and Bob was on tour with Finn, a girl from New York called Dana Fuchs.
Yeah.
And we met, and I really liked Bob's style of playing. I was getting sick of the, you know, little ironing board on stage, and the little pianos and the nod nonsense and that, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I wanted a Hammond on my stage.
So
musically we fitted, you know, as well, and we had a lot in common, and we got on really well personally. And so, yeah, I mean, eventually, you know, it took it a long time, but, you know, eventually we've finally found the right formula for this band, and it's real, and you know, and the proof of that's in the pudding, you know, it's all working out. So, very happy.
Yeah, that's great. So you mentioned some of your musical influences there before, like Frankie Miller and Free and Buddy Guy, yeah, and people like that. But were there any bands in Scotland growing up that you would say were like your local music heroes?
Well, I mean, what you got to see in sort of in Glasgow was a lot of you either got the local bar bands, or you had to make the big jump into the bigger stages, like the Barrowlands and things like that. So I mean, I always remember guys like Big George and Business. Always been a great influence really on myself and particularly my brother as well. I mean, you know, without really knowing it at the time as well, you know, you only realise how much of an influence George was on you later in life, you know, and George was a tragic fellow. And he had his own set of demons, and unfortunately we lost him a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But no, I always remember having been greatly influenced by George and various bands going around. I mean, there's too many names to mention, but I mean, you know, I mean bands like I said, I mean, Big Country were a great band. I mean, a Scottish band. I mean, they were one of my favourites. You know, great musically, great songs, and a lot of, again, I think I was always attracted to music that had passion and fire around it. You know, everyone that did it with a lot of meaning, and I ultimately was drawn to it. You know, and there's all sorts of music, technical genius and everything else going along with it, but well, if someone's performing something from the heart, you can tell they're doing that, you know, and that's what draws me to that kind of music.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm glad you said Big George, because I remember speaking to Stevie about that quite extensively the last time we chatted as well. I love the cover of The Storm that he does. It's incredible.
He does way to the great version of that. That's wonderful, yeah.
Cool. So basically the last question I've got for you really is, so what plans do you have for King King this year? Obviously the new album, you got the UK tour coming up. What else is on the cards for 2015?
Well, this year is, I mean, like I said, it's all about to kick off now, you know, and we've been rushing to get this album sort of finished in time for all the deadlines, and you know, interviews like this, I'm literally doing all day, every day. It's been fantastic, the amount of PR and promotion that we've put in, and everyone's sort of taking a massive interest in the band and in the album and what's to come, so I'm very, very pleased. We've got the UK tour coming up starting on the 19th.
Yeah.
We start our journey up in Tendal at the Arts Centre up there, and then we finish off the tour in the UK around, I think it's the 22nd of March,
right,
up in Aberdeen, in fact. And then we've got a very, very short couple of days off, and then we head out to Europe, Scandinavia.
Yeah.
And then the official launch gig for the official launch of the album is going to be in the London Jazz Cafe on the 6th of May.
Yeah.
And then there's a few sort of Scandinavian gigs around that as well that we're doing shows out there, festival stuff. And then I'm going to take a little breather for a couple of weeks. I'm going to have a couple of weeks off to try and recover, because I've no doubt my body and my voice will be in horrendous shape by then.
Yeah.
So we're gonna I tried my hardest to take the whole of May off, but it just never works out at all. So I was gonna go on holiday, but it's probably never gonna happen. I'm probably never gonna have a holiday forever. but no, I won't complain. You know, life's good, so I'll take it. But yeah, so that's happening, and then you know, from basically the end of May right through the summer, I mean, we do a massive amount over in France and Switzerland and things like that, and Germany and stuff. So that's going to take us right through until September again.
Yeah.
And I'll be doing another UK tour with the Middle Brothers up till sort of most of the way through October. And then it all kicks off again right up till next Christmas. So, I mean, it's a busy old time, and I'm very, very pleased about it. And I just hope I can last the pace.
Yeah, that's great. No, I hope so too. It sounds great. I'm really happy that things are going so well for you guys. You really deserve it.
Yeah, it's great.
So yeah, that's all the questions I've got for you, and thanks for taking the time to speak to us, and I'll see you next month at the Sage Gateshead for your headline date, and I'll see you soon.
See you in there.
Yeah.